They put me with another butch woman. Her name was Cindy, and she looked like Fred Flintstone. And across this hallway was my girlfriend and this girl, and her name was Faith. She was a 15-year-old prostitute. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One day, she got fucking caught up real bad with a bad John and beat the fuck out of and raped. Cindy had a crush on her. Cindy's like, was so sad and like, fuck them motherfuckers. She's like, Danielle, you want to do something with me? I'm like, yeah, dude, like, whatever. She's like, I think we can make a good living, like, good money. Okay. So Cindy came up with this plan to have Faith go and grab John's off Sepulveda, take him behind Denny's, and we would wait with baseball bats. And when she got their fucking pants down, she would go like that, and we'd drag them out and beat them. Mm-hmm. And take their wallets and whatever shit they had. We did it to like 40 people before they started, like, the cops got involved. And then we got busted. But we kind of felt like took out revenge on these fools, you know?
This is Transformations Recovery Podcast, Season 2, Episode 3. On today's episode, Roman and Cecily sit down with Danielle, OG skater, punk rocker, alcoholic. Due to the graphic nature of this podcast, listener discretion is advised.
All right, so no one listening to this is going to know who you are unless you introduce yourself. So
oh, hey. I'm Danielle Bernal, and I'm 53 years old. I've been sober it'll be 22 years, October 15th of 2021. I've been into punk rock since 1983. It's basically saved my life. So I was born in Pomona in April 22nd, 1967. My real father died of a heroin overdose before I was even born. He was given a hot shot by a rival gang because it was like the early parts of bigger gangs that were being formed, and I don't want to mention any names, but so he was one of like kind of the leaders, and they wanted him gone, and they took care of him, and my mom was 3 months pregnant with me. And when I was born, my mom worked at a needle factory. Like, they made syringes, like, mm-hmm. for the needles, and my mom did QC, and she met my stepdad there. And he was a forklift driver there, and he was a heroin addict. So I remember just being a kid and being around people using, but my mom never used. She never even smoked a cigarette. She just, I don't know why she loved heroin addicts so much, or maybe she didn't know. But I remember being a kid and everybody being knocked out and looking at all the bent spoons and like the syringes and everybody just like sleeping and me just fucking with shit, you know? Not using or anything, I was only like a baby, but I remember clearly. But there was a situation where my stepdad had beat me pretty fucking bad, and my father's family being gang related, they were gonna like kidnap me and kill him. So my aunt said, you know, they're gonna kill John and they're gonna kidnap Danielle. So my stepdad took us to Key West, Florida, where I was raised until I was 11. And I was like an island child. I never was home. I was always like playing in the water and making friends and just being an island kid. And my stepdad's father, his name was Walter, and he used to hang out with Ernest Hemingway. Like, and he did like watercolors for him of Sloppy Joe's where they would drink together and stuff. And he basically taught me a lot about life. I didn't know that Key West was a gay island. Like, the mayor of Key West was gay at the time, which was unheard of. And I was kind of didn't know that gay was wrong, and I knew I was gay at a young age. So I was raised on this island, and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I would see men with men, women with women, and there was nothing wrong with it. And then we moved back to LA into projects, and then shit hit the fan because here I am, this free island child, and I come to LA, Canoga Park, mm-hmm. and I'm just like, fuck, this sucks. I was picked on because I look very masculine, mm-hmm. even at a young age. And I was wearing, you know, I dressed, you know, my mom made our clothes and very poor. But I had a skateboard. And because I had a skateboard, this was like 76. Other kids wanted to know what the fuck that was, and we kind of made our own little cliques of skateboarders and BMX riders.
Yeah.
You know, and we made like ramps and so I had a little clique, and they didn't care that I was odd and that I looked like a dude just as long as I could skate. So then we moved again to Santa Clarita in 1980, and I was like, I had already formed this kind of foundation. By then I was already smoking weed and like drinking a little bit, you know, but it was more so like to be social, not so much to, because I was in pain or anything. You know, the beatings from my stepdad kept, you know, I still got those, but that wasn't anything really bad to me. It was like stuff that I was used to. But when we moved to Santa Clarita, that's when the shit really hit the fan, because it was like all like kind of, it's not like how it is now. It's all like white, like it was white people and fucked up cops. Mm-hmm. And they didn't like me because they didn't know who the fuck I was. You know, they would ask me why I look like a guy and I'm a girl. They would beat me if they saw me. I was a little shit too. You know, I was a skateboarder. And then there was a pool that we used to skate at, and it was empty. It was a skateboard. It was a pool company that went out of business, but it left its pools empty. So all us kids would go there and skate, and we'd have a little beatbox, and we'd you know, listen to the Go-Go's and, you know, like B-52s and stuff. And there was this guy named Randy Long, and he was, he's all, man, why, I was fucked up too. I was like drunk, just like perfectly like seasoned. At the right, you know, when you hit that like drunkenness where you're just like perfect.
Yeah.
If you drank one more drink, you'd be like overboard, but I was there. So Randy comes and he's like, man, why you guys listen to this tuna boat music? He was like, I think I was 14, he was 19 or 20. He was already kind of man dude, kind of. He had chest hair and stuff. And he was going to Hollywood, you know, to see bands, and he put in this fucking tape. And it was like, he gives me a tape, he's like, put this shit on, I don't want to listen to that fucking shit. And I look and it's like Air Supply. Like, fucking Air Supply, dude, fuck this. And he had put the tape over the holes, and then we put it in, and it was the Germs. And I was skateboarding. Like, I would always try to hit the tiles up on the top, hit the tiles. And I got like Lakopi grind up on the top, and I was like, what is this, man? He's like, this is fucking like, this is a Germs band, this is punk rock. And I'm like, dude, it feels like how I feel in my head. Like, it made sense to me, it clicked, you know? And he's all, that's Darby Crash, man. Like, I go, oh, fuck, I gotta see this band. He's all, you can't, Darby's dead. And then he's like, then he says, he was a homo. I go, how did he die? He's like, heroin. I'm like, wow, my stepdad, or my dad died of heroin, you know, and I'm gay. So I'm like, this is my shit. You know, this is what I need to be listening to. This is what my life needs to be, you know? And I just was not getting along with my family, my parents, because my stepdad was pretty homophobic, you know? Which is weird because like there's five of us and three of us are gay.
Wow.
So yeah, be a homophobe and you know, what's gonna happen? You're gonna have gay kids.
The irony.
Yeah, I remember like next door there was a couple that moved next door, and there were two moms and a daughter, and I liked the daughter, she was cool, like I was trying to teach her about punk rock and stuff, you know, but my dad said, don't go next door, they're a bunch of fucking dykes, and I knew that I was one, and I knew like if he hated them that much.
Was he just oblivious?
I think that they knew, but they didn't want to know. I would hang out with dudes, so I think maybe they thought maybe those were my boyfriends. You know what I mean? Like, I've never hung out with women. You know, and the women I did hang out with were, like, kind of, like, girls I wanted to date. Or they were my besties that, you know, we were just friends. But, it was a whole fucking fucked up thing because I'd have crushes on girls in high, junior high and high school. And then I would make up in my head that we were going out and like all this shit. And then I'd see them with guys and I'd be so heartbroken, but I couldn't really talk to anybody about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was really like, so I would drink. And it would make me feel better. And then I would act obnoxious and, you know, suppress like these sad feelings I would have all the time. You know, so like in 83, I ran away from home to Hollywood. And I ran away with my best friend, Steve. And we had skateboards, backpacks, and leather jackets, and that's all we had. And we went to Hollywood.
That's all you needed.
That's all, yeah. You know? And we took a bus to Hollywood, and we were scared. Because we're like, fuck, this is real. Like around 2:30 in the morning, we're like, but we both didn't want to tell each other. We were scared because we were in so much trouble, you know? I was already at this point like committing crimes, you know, and had been brought back to my parents, like, you know, I vandalized a cop car, you know, like, you know, shit like that. Like, you know, when they would, if I see a cop car, I'd slash the tires or do something, key it, you know, and I got caught in time, you know? So I'm walking down, we're skateboarding down Melrose, it's like 2:30 in the morning, and I see this woman, and she's like, hey, you kids, get over here. And we go over there, and she's like, what are you fucking kids doing out here? And I'm like, we ran away from home. So, well, where are you going to put your shit? I'm like, in the bushes. So your shit's going to get fucking stolen, dumbass fucking kids. And her name was Lydia Ortiz. And she, at the time, was managing the Cramps, the Go-Go's, and X. And she, Go-Go's played Solid Gold. Do you remember that show?
Oh, yeah.
And they played Solid Gold, and she was there. She got in a fight with her girlfriend, Donna, and she started walking down Melrose, and she caught us. Right when she's reprimanding us, this old car, like a 48 Plymouth, comes barreling down Melrose, goes up on the curb, and is... This woman looks like Marilyn Monroe. And I'm like, what the fuck? And Lydia's this butch woman. And she'll, Lydia, get in the fucking car. And she'll, well, I want these kids to come. And so we get in the car. And I fucking look at them, a butch femme couple. And I'm like, in an old car. And I'm just like, Steve, this is where we're supposed to be. Like, this is it, man. Like, fate has hit us. And like, we are here. This is heaven.
This is
heaven. And, he's like, whatever. I'm fucking hungry and tired. So Lydia, she tells her girlfriend, yeah, these kids, they're like, you know, they're just run away from home. I want to help them out. And I remember this clear as the day, man. Like, Donna looks at Lydia and says, you can't even take care of your fucking self. Lydia was a heroin addict. I didn't know that at the time. So we go into Lydia's apartment, and I look on our refrigerator, and sure as shit, there's her with Lex Interior, Poison Ivy, the Go-Go's, Xene, John Doe, DJ Bone Break, fucking, you know, like, all of them. And I'm just like, Billy, you know, with his stance, and Lydia's there, like, behind him. I'm just like, fuck, man. And so, you guys ain't staying in my fucking house. You go sleep in my car. I'm like, and give us your IDs. I'm like, what do you want our... She'll give us your license. I'm like, what do you want our license for? She'll, because if you rip us off, I know where to fucking find you. I know your names. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't have licenses. We're fucking 14. And she's, all we had was school IDs. So we gave her that. We slept in her car. She woke us up, let us take showers, and gave us OD. And says, I'm going to school you on the streets. You guys got to listen to me. Don't go to Hotel Hell. Don't hang around Okie Dogs. And don't go to Errol Flynn's mansion, which is now Runyon Canyon. Yeah. I said, okay. We ate, we're clean, felt good. I'm like, Steve, let's go to Okie Dogs. I never heard of Okie Dogs before. Didn't know anything about the streets.
Hey, this is Sammy Town. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe, review, share, like, and comment.
We go to Okie Dogs, and it's all punks. I hooked up with this gang, HRP, Hollywood Rap Patrol, and Baby Crazy, Bob Two Tone, and Jay the Skinhead. There's Biker Jerry, who was like the local biker pimp of young punk rock girls. And nobody wanted me because I looked like a dude, and like, how are you gonna sell that? You know, which was good on my behalf, you know? Yeah. But we kind of, I never joined HRP because I knew that gang life wasn't cool because of what had happened to my father, you know, and that side of the family of prisons and shit like that. And I'm not a joiner. Even as a young kid, I didn't want to be boxed into something that I would have to have permission to do shit, you know. So they were cool, though. They let us hang out with them. We panhandled at the Hollywood Grauman's Theater to get money to go to the Vex and like all these other shows, get drunk, go sleep at Hotel Hell. The cops would come and let dogs in because they didn't want to come in. So they would let the dogs go and like chase us all out. And one time I broke my ankle, like I fell downstairs, so I was being pushed in a shopping cart. And their fun thing was to push me in the middle of Hollywood Boulevard and see how I was going to get out of the shopping cart and get myself to the other side of the street and see how long it would take. We go to Errol Flynn's mansion and kind of like strong arm rob people of their camera equipment and shit like that, you know. And then there was a trailer in Okie Dogs that was acted as a pawn shop too. So we'd pawn the stuff there across the street. The liquor store is still there. Okie Dogs now is a Fat Burger, but the liquor store that used to sell us beer at a young age is still there. So we used to do that. I mean, shit was really fucking fun. And it was a summer of just being a kid. And the kids didn't care that I was gay. They knew I was gay. I didn't have to say anything. And when I said, they're all like, no shit. Like, who gives a fuck? Danielle, all that matters is, like, we're surviving and we're fucking, like, we love punk rock music. Mm-hmm. I found my fucking tribe, you know. And then a girl I was dating in Santa Clarita came down to see me. And her dad was a printer and she had all these Billy Idol posters. And we went to, like, down Melrose and we sold them to all these, like, record stores. I had money. Mm-hmm. And the gang was fucking stoked. And they wanted to rob this place and I didn't want to go. Because we were trying to get money to go to San Francisco. And I stayed with my girl because she was going to leave that next day to go back home to Santa Clarita. And Steve, my homie, ended up going. And they got caught. And Steve fell off a 15-foot wall and landed on his face. I was on the streets alone. And when he was in the hospital, my mom went to see him and said, like, here's Lydia's number, you should call her. She can find Danielle. No, Danielle's on the streets alone. And I guess my parents found Lydia and gave her $30 to get me on the Greyhound to go back to Santa Clarita. Man, she was checking for me everywhere. And everybody was afraid of Lydia. She was this butch dyke that, like, can fight and knew the streets and knew everybody. So nobody wanted to hang out with me because they're like, Lydia was looking for me. So I was like, fuck. I'm an Okie Dogs girl. And I remember Bob Tito telling me, like, dude, Lydia's looking for you. You're in trouble. What'd you do? I'm like, what? Right when he said that, Lydia and Don roll up in their old car. Danielle, get in the fucking car. Fuck. I go in the car and they're like, your dad gave me $30 to get you on the Greyhound. I got to do that. But they took me to Los Tacos to eat my final meal. And I'm like, Lydia, they beat me. He beats me. And she's like, hey, man, I told your dad I would get you on that fucking bus. That's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. What you do from the bus is not my fucking concern. I'm like, oh, I can just leave once I get, like, where I'm going. So Donna hits Lydia and says, she needs to go home. You can't fucking tell her that. And right when I got off at Santa Clarita, I called my friend Andy and I say, hey, Andy. So I thought you were in Hollywood. I'm like, I had to take a bus home. And she's like, oh, I'm going to Contempo, which was in Magic Mountain. It was a dance club. But also, there was bands that would play like Bow Wow Wow. Bow Wow Wow was playing that night. And I'm like, dude, I want to go. I would jump the wall and get a handstand and fucking from my friends that had like month passes or year passes. And I would be able to play at Magic Mountain all fucking day. So I was like stoked. And I would stay at my friend Andy's. But the problem was I would get fucked up. And I was so incorrigible that I would fuck up shit. Mm-hmm. And do crimes. And I got busted. And like a month later, I got busted. And it was, my parents were fed up. They're like, fuck it. So I, the cops, they told my dad's like, she won't stay home. I don't know what the fuck to do. The cops hated me because I would fuck their cars up. I crashed their cop car into a fucking, they went to, this was the last straw with the cops. Like, they went to fucking break up a party, but they left their car running and I put it in gear and it crashed into the fucking garage, hitting all the cars. And there was a guy in the back, this guy named Stuart, and he was one of those punks, and I'm sure you guys ran into him, that never went to shows but had all the fucking rad clothes and shit, like kind of like a fake soldier. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like we were the Marines of punk rock and he was like more National Guard. But call me a poser, you know?
Yeah.
And I hated that so much. He was locked up in the back. And I said, Stuart, you tell anybody I did this shit, I will fucking kill your ass. He never told nobody. He said a long hair did it.
Always blame long hair. Yeah.
And I'm like, but really cops knew it was me, you know? And so they told my dad to tie me up. So my dad fucking hog tied me with speaker wire and beat me until the next day. And he woke me up to weed the cactus garden, right? I'm like, how the fuck you weed a cactus garden, man? Like, so I'm sitting in the middle of this cactus garden at 5 in the morning before he left for work. He's all, and when you get done with that, I said, when you leave, I'm out of here. He couldn't run at me because I'm in the middle of the fucking cactus garden. Right? I made sure I was good and protected. And in my head, I said, one day I'm going to be older than you and stronger than you, and I'm going to kill you. Because you're going to be weak and old. And I left. I never went back home. I got busted and my parents said, "Where did the state?" And I went to court and they said, "Danielle Bernal." I'm like, "Yeah." And they were like, "Oh, you are now a ward of the state." And my PO's all, I go, "I didn't even know what that was. Like, what is that?" And she says, "That means that the state of California is your mom and dad and they can keep you till you're 26. I'm like, does that mean I don't get Christmas presents? Because that's how young I was. Like, I didn't know, like, what that meant. And I was so bad, with such a bad record for being incorrigible, that no placement in California wanted me. But one placement. Because I met a girl that was equally as incorrigible as me. And we, like, fell in love. And she asked her caseworker that she would be good if they would come interview me to get me into that placement. And it was called Penny Lane, and it was in Sepulveda, right in the middle of Columbus Street, which was drug infested. My first encounter when I went into fucking Penny Lane was a woman walking down the hallway, and she was walking weird, holding onto the carpet, because it looked like a skating rink inside. It was weird. And I asked Jen, I go, "Jen, what the fuck?" That's Grumpy. She's from the Casual Ladies, Pocahontas Flats. She's on PCP. I'm like, what the fuck? I have to talk to her. That's when my PCP addiction happened.
Oh, Jesus.
Because you can sneak it into Penny Lane and smoke it in the bathrooms and be fucked up. So I hung out with the Cholas and, like, learned a bunch of good shit. And we would hit, there was a button that you could hit and it would open the doors, like an emergency exit. So we would leave on the weekends. And then if we committed crimes, we'd go back to juvenile hall. If not, we'd get restrictions. So we took that chances all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I ended up, they put me with another butch woman. Her name was Cindy, and she looked like Fred Flintstone. And across this hallway was my girlfriend and this girl, and her name was Faith. She was a fucking prostitute, like 15-year-old prostitute. And she made a bunch of money, you know, and she would make up her passes and go out and hook. One day she got fucking caught up real bad with a bad John and beat the fuck out of and raped. Cindy had a crush on her. Cindy was like more street than me because she was raised on the streets. Cindy's like, was so sad and like, fuck them motherfuckers. She's like, "Danielle, you want to do something with me?" I'm like, "Yeah, dude, like whatever." She's like, "I think we can make a good living, like good money." Okay. So Cindy came up with this plan to have Faith go and grab John's off Sepulveda, take him behind Denny's, and we would wait with baseball bats, and when she got their fucking pants down, she would go like that, and we'd drag them out and beat them, and take their wallets and whatever shit they had. We did it to like 40 people before they started doing, like, the cops got involved. and then we got busted. But we made a lot of money and kind of felt like revenge, like, you know, took out revenge on these fools, you know. But Faith, they put me in an emancipation program, and it was way too much freedom for me. I just left, and I'm still on AWOL right now. I never went back. Oh, man. You know, they would have kept me till I was 26, and I'm just like, I can't do that. No. You know, so I went to just like living on the streets and crashing where I could, and kind of trying to be I didn't know how to manage my life, and I was just already like caught up with PCP and drinking and whatever drugs I could do, but I stayed away from heroin. I only did it once, and that was at gunpoint, because some guy, like, I would hitchhike to this girl I was seeing in Encino, and I would hitchhike back to placement, and I had to be back at a certain time, and I would pray to God, and it's so stupid. God, if you have a car pull over, I will be good or whatever. And I would always get picked up by the worst guys. This one guy was Asian in a fucking white Porsche, and he had just scored some heroin, but he wanted to test it out on me first. And if I died, he'd kick me out. But if I lived, he'd drop me off. And he made me smoke it at gunpoint. I took me up in the hills by Encino and fucking... So I smoked it. I didn't even know what I was doing. He drops me off at my placement. This other girl, Jenna, this other girl I was seeing in placement said, "You're high." I'm like, "I know." I told her what happened, and she's like, "Oh my God, you're gonna be so, they're gonna put you in jail because they're gonna test you." I'm like, "I go, what should I do?" She'll just start crying and say, "You miss your parents." I'm like, "It worked." I'm like, "Thanks, Jen, fuck." So I go back and do it again the following fucking weekend. Like, please God, I'll be good. If I could just get another ride. Dude pulls over. Naked dude with a boner this time. Yes. And I'm just like, I get in the car and I'm like, he's like, "How old are you?" I'm like, 15. "Oh, you're a good looking little boy." I'm like, "Well, actually I'm a girl and I'm gay." And his boner went. He's like, "Where are you going?" I'm like, "Ran in Sepulveda." And he gave me a ride. He's like, "You fucking false advertisement!" I was just like, whatever. You know, so, like, I think looking like a dude got me out of a bunch of stuff, mm-hmm. but also when I went into what is the real world for work and stuff like that, it was very hard in the 80s to be able to be, like, a butch woman. And butch women are always the bottom rung of the LGBTQ community, because we're not trans and we're not like, I mean, when I started dating Marion, we were a butch femme couple, and we got shunned a lot because we were a butch femme couple, because the feminists thought we were trying to be a straight couple, and that's not cool, and, you know, and I'm just like, we're just in love, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't matter. But, you know, we got kicked out of a bar in the Mission because we're a butch femme couple. You know, which it's our community.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, the butch. I could say this about the butch, us butches, is we live in communities where we're poor, we're working class people, because who's gonna fucking hire us? And when they do, we do a good job. Mm-hmm. We're very dependable. We just want a chance, so we move in with. We have our girlfriends, and unfortunately, we have to live in not so good areas. So what do? We have our other homies come and live, our other butch couples come and live. We make that community safe. Mm-hmm. And it's usually around gangs. And what gang member doesn't have a gay thea or a gay theo? Right? So they got our backs.
Yes.
So we have barbecues and we invite our gay boyfriends to come over. Oh, this is such a great community. So what do? They start buying up all the fucking houses. So we are the ones that started the gentrification movement, because we go into these fucking places, we make them safe.
Yeah.
Gay people, our gay boyfriends come in, make it pretty, and then all the fucking gang members have to go because they can't afford to fucking live there. It's happened in Bernal Heights, the Mission District, Oakland, because we keep getting pushed out. Mm-hmm. Echo Park, that was a, I mean, in the 80s, that was a primarily, like, it was fucking heavily gang, mm-hmm. but yeah. also very much a butch community. Mm-hmm. Silver Lake, gay, the butch women were there, and then the gay men came and made it the Swish Alps. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we make, you know, we are, that was our movement.
Yeah.
You know? But when I started using a lot, I was just like, I had met Marion in like 1995, and I loved the Insanes, and we met at a show, and she was attracted to me, and I was attracted to her, and we started dating. But her biggest fear was me being such an alcoholic that she was afraid to be involved with me because she was afraid that I was going to die of alcoholism or somebody was going to kill me mm-hmm. because I was just so out of control. You know, I would steal cars down here to go to San Francisco to visit her. And my hangovers were so bad. Like, I remember one time I was at her place. I was so hungover. I was. You ever been that hungover where you're trying to throw up and nothing's coming out?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I go, oh, man, can you get me, like, a bagel or something? So she fucking, like, and they were doing construction up on the top, and I was like, ugh. And I went back to sleep, and all of a sudden, this fucking bagel hits me on the head, and then a thing of orange juice hits me in the fucking head, and she'll, fuck you. And I'm like, what the fuck? And she'll, those guys down upstairs are fucking telling me, suck their dicks and shit, because Marin, you know, she's pretty.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck? Are you going, sweetheart? So I get my switchblade, I go downstairs, and I slash all their tires mm-hmm. and their trucks. And I go back upstairs. And she'll, what'd you do? I'm like, I slashed their fucking tires, fuck them. And she'll, no, you didn't. I'm like, yeah, I did. So we get ready and we're gonna go to the beach for the day. I was driving and there's tow trucks. I did all their tires, not just one.
Yeah.
And there's two trucks and they're trying to get their cars on their flatbeds and shit. Marion hangs out the window and she's like, flips them off. She'll, suck my fucking dick. And we drive off and she, we're driving and we're on the coast. And she's like, that's the most romantic thing anybody's ever done for me. And I'm like, yeah, it's all good. I got you. Like, I got your back. You know? And I don't think she was used to people having her back like that. Like, partners. Mm-hmm. You know, her friends mm-hmm. did. But I don't think her partners did. And I don't think she would let herself love because of all this tragic stuff that had happened to her, you know.
Transformations Recovery Podcast is committed to helping those who are still suffering. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, share, and review. It will really help us out. Thanks.
When I got sober, I lived in North Hollywood, and our across the street neighbor, one of them was like a lieutenant for the LAPD or some kind of cop. So I don't know what kind, but he was high up. Next door was Cholas, and they're having a party, and it was a big party because they put out flyers to invite people. And I had old cars, so I would always be working out and, you know, working on my old cars and stuff, and they invited me. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. So I call my homies and I go to this fucking party, and Marion was still living in San Francisco, but she was coming down that Sunday to stay for a week. And I said, cool, you know, like, yeah, I'll be there. I started drinking, too. I'm like, fuck yeah, I drank like a half gallon of vodka at this time, smoked a little bit of Sherm and got some fucking, like, you know, like some beers. My homie showed up. And we might have even dropped acid. I don't even remember. But we went to the party, and my friend Nathan is totally fucking, like, tattooed, and he has even his dick tattooed and pierced. And they were, like, the cholos came up to Nathan and said, man, what else you got tattooed and shit, man? Fuck. He pulls his dick out. And they were like, man, you some kind of fucking faggot. He's like, no, I'm not. No, you asked what else. And it was all pierced. And he pulled it out by his... And I'm like, dude. And I get in front of the dudes that are going to beat Nathan up. I said, no. He's not gay, man. He's all, fuck you his boyfriend. I'm like, actually, like, I'm a dyke and, like, I'm gay.
Yeah.
They're all, that was too much head tripping for them. Their fucking heads were going to explode. It was too much. They must have not had Diaz and Theo that were gay.
Yeah.
So they were going to jump us. But I said, man, why don't you and Nathan just fight one-on-one? They said, okay. So we go in the middle of the street. And I had my friend Tony and Eddie. By this time, my other friends had left because they didn't want no part of us
yeah.
being fucked up. Some of my friends would stay, And then when I would hit that little teetering point of when I was going to fucking start reacting violently, they would leave because they knew some shit was going to pop off. So those friends were gone. Tony, Eddie, Nathan, they stayed. So we're in this big middle of this, in the street in North Hollywood, and Nathan and this cholo were in the middle, and they pull out knives. And Nathan runs to my house, leaves us there, and I'm like, fuck. So we run, I run behind Nathan, Tony runs in, and Eddie falls on my stairs, and one of the cholos had a 40-ouncer, and they broke it, was trying to break it on the curb that they're gonna stab him with it. So I get my guns, they're always loaded, and I had my shotgun, I go, you guys wanna fuck around with me? And I fucking pointed a gun at them, and I shot, like not at them, but like above, and then I just started blasting fucking cops down the fucking street, and it was, went dead quiet, and I'm like, yeah, gone. I said, I gave Tony and Eddie my fucking flashlights. I said, go get my shell casings. Nathan, we need to hide these fucking guns. They all leave, and I'm home in my place alone, and I'm like, these fuckers, I think they're from 18th Street. Like, they're gonna fucking, like, want retribution. What if I fucking killed somebody? In fact, what if one of those stray bullets went through the fucking wall and killed a mom, a dad, a baby, a grandma, a grandpa? Like, I went instant fucking sober. I got on my knees and I fucking prayed to God and I said, God, if you let me get away with this, when I don't have to go to prison and nobody got murdered or killed, like a grandma or a child or a mom or dad going to work, I promise I'll never drink again. My whole fucking house lit up and I was struck on the ground. I swear to God, I was like, and I get up and I'm like, sober, and I never drink again.
Wow.
To this day, I would go to bars, and my obsession for drinking and using drugs was gone. I don't understand it. The next day, there was helicopters, and I'm like, I'm busted. So I said, okay, God didn't keep his fucking shit with me. Promise, I'm gonna fucking get fucked up. I'm gonna drink. So I opened a beer. And I call my friend Shane Enholm. He's like, he was in the Flower Leopards, and he was a dear friend to me. He was a bank robber too, and he knew what to do. So I go, Shane, I told him what up. He's like, hide those fucking guns, don't cop the shit. If they say they saw you doing that shit, it wasn't you. Don't say shit, Danielle. Nothing. I said, okay, Shane, he'll call me if you need to call me from jail. I said, okay. Put the guns in the attic, and I still hear it, and I see detectives looking. Fucking shit on the ground. I go, somebody got murdered. I go to get my beer, and there's a knock on my door, and I'm like, I just did. I put my beer down. Let me take a drink of it. I go to the door, and it's the cop from across the street. He says, Danielle, open your hand. He puts like 2 9-millimeter casings in my hand. He's like, what are these? I'm like, don't know. And I give them back to him. He's all, I saw what went down yesterday. I understand why you did it. I'm so sick of those fucking gangbangers too. But you do not take your fucking, you don't take the law into your own hands. I saw you lighting off firecrackers. He said, yeah, I did do that. He said, if I ever see you lighting firecrackers again in the middle of the street, you're gonna go to jail so quick. This is your first get out of jail card and your only one. I go, sir, I don't know what you're talking about, but I stopped drinking. And I shut the door. I had to go to Burbank Airport to pick up Marion. And I tell Marion the whole story. And she's like, the only thing out of her fucking mouth was, those Chola girls like you. Why were you hanging out with them? You're trying to get with them, huh? Drinking. I don't want to drink.
Yeah.
I don't know what's wrong with me. And I called my parents. I said, Mom, I quit drinking. They said, oh, good luck with that. I had a resentment with that for a long time. I think a really long time. Like, I was almost not drinking just to spite them, but whatever fucking, whatever works, works.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If that's what it took. You know, What I felt in my life was, like, I think that there was some kind of curse. My great-grandmother was a bruja. You know, she could give ojo, the evil eye. Mm-hmm. And she didn't like my stepdad. She didn't like my real dad. And I think that there was a curse put upon me to have me die of an overdose or some alcoholic-related issue. And I think the demons were like... And this is just my thoughts. But I think the demons were like, we're going to get her. I've OD'd on alcohol twice in the hospital. Death. Mm-hmm. Dead. Done. I've been revived. You know? And I think the demons were like, yeah, we got her now. And I lived. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't go to jail. When I got the shootout, I stopped drinking. So I think the demons were like, we're going to take everybody she loves. So they took Marion. And when Marion died, I was like, it still didn't shake my sobriety, you know? If anything, it got me deeper into the program.
We love making this podcast and want to keep doing it. Please consider becoming a patron of our podcast on Patreon. Simply go to patreon.com and search Transformations Care Podcast, or click the link on our website at transformationscare.com. Pledge any amount and receive our undying love. If you pledge $10, we'll give you the raw, unedited version of each week's interview, plus other cool swag. Pledge $25 and receive a Transformations Care bag, invitations to special events, bonus content, and other surprises. Most importantly, at 2,000 patrons, we will scholarship an addict or alcoholic through the Transformations Care Residential Detox Program.
I was lightly dabbling into AA, but never really going. And I remember going, I wanted to kill myself after Marion died. And my friend Becky Rack, she was in the Lunatics, she was a drummer in the Lunatics. She's a fucking great person, man. She's like,
we have an episode of her.
Oh, you do? She's yeah. so awesome.
She's yeah, so, we so great. I love Becky. Her.
She took me to this meeting, and it was this man that was saying he was an old guy, right? He didn't drink till he was like 50. He had kids, his wife, perfect life. Mm-hmm. He was washing dishes and looking at his kids, and his wife would go swimming across the street at his brother's house, and some guy came and killed them in a car or a motorcycle or something. Ran over right in front of his face.
Jesus.
At the fucking funeral, his brother gave him alcohol. And that was the first time he ever drank in his whole life. And he's fucking ended up like homeless in a shelter, just drinking. Mm-hmm. And then he got sober. And now he's old, like really old, like 70, I don't know. And I was like, I left there going like, I am a pussy. I need to butch the fuck up. Like, so many people have it so much worse. And if I can't be an example to people, like this gentleman was to me, like, then what the fuck is this all about? Mm-hmm. Marion's death would not have meant shit. And I started dating Jen Graham, who's the biggest, most notorious, like, alcoholic in the rooms. We ended up falling in love. I sold the Vespa to Prop 36 her so she can get rid of her felonies. You know, like, we were, like, you know, trying to plan this life together. Mm-hmm. And, when I was in Sundance, she started using. And I didn't know this, but she was using before I even left. But I didn't know she was using to the extent she was using. And I came home, and the garbage was thrown away. She lived with me a year, never threw the fucking trash. So my friend Scratch, who went with me to Sundance, he's like, let's check the trash can. And there was fucking bottles in there. There was fucking rails, like she was, like, and fucking syringes. And I'm like, I call her on the phone and said, don't come back here. Mm-mm. And then there was a phone number, and I call it, and I go, yeah, whose phone number? And it was some chola chick. I go, yeah, I'm looking for Jen Grant. She took off with my old man, he's on parole, I'm gonna violate his ass right now. I'm like, fuck, well, she went deep. Yeah. Like, there was no middle ground with Jen. She was either a soloer or fucking like down fucking with MS-13, dude. Yes. Like there was no fucking middle ground with that chick. Yeah. You either, if you saw Jen in high heels, she was good. Once the flip flops went on,
done.
Done. Done. So I call her. Don't come home. She comes home.
Yeah.
At like 4 in the morning. Knocks on the door. I'm like, you can't come here. Yes, I can. I have mail here. I'm allowed to be here. My friend Scratch spent the night that night. And I went into Jen's car. And there was fucking speed pipes and fucking... I grabbed all the shit and put it in my house for the cops. Mm-hmm. And the cops show up and they take Jen out to her car. And the one cop is in the house with me. And I didn't even, like, unpack my stuff from Sundance. And the cop comes in and says, oh, she says all that drug paraphernalia is yours and that you beat her up. I said, what? And the cop, thank God, that was in the house with me, I did jiu-jitsu MMA with. So he knew that if I had beat her up, she'd look a lot worse.
She'd be
if not
up.
Dead.
Yeah.
You know? And he's all, I trained with Danielle. Like, I know that she would not do that. And I go, dude, I just got back. And Scratch is all, we didn't. Like, we don't even do drugs.
Yeah.
You know? And because I took all the stuff out of her car, they let her drive off. And I walked to the end of the driveway, and I saw her, and I looked at her, and it was the last time I saw her alive. I get a call 2 days later. Her mom calls me and tells me that she's in the hospital. And I'm like, is she dead? And she's like, no, she's not dead, but it's bad. So I'm like, okay, so I go to Holy Cross. She was on life support, like, she was gone. And I asked the nurse, I said, hey, is there any chance that she's gonna live? And she said, well, if she does, she won't be able to hold the coffee cup. She's brain dead. And I said, fuck, man. So she died about 4 days later. And my stepdad's like, fuck, like fucking two people die of overdoses. Why? I said, in my head, I was like, bitch, I learned this shit from you. Mm-hmm. I feel comfortable with this. Mm-hmm. Heroin is my fucking, like, safe zone. I'm comfortable in chaos. Mm-hmm. And I stayed single. And I got married, and that was a whole fucking... I moved to the Bay Area. And that didn't work out. I come back and I'm just like broken, like sober bottom when I came back from the Bay Area. You know, like I was financially, I moved in here. Gigi took me in, and this is 5 years ago, and I was okay with being alone the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. As long as I was sober and had my community of people and punk rock and sobriety, I was gonna be okay. Could I find another lover? I hope so, but it wasn't like, I don't think she could be the type of person that I deserved until I made myself feel worthy of what I was able to deserve. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, my sobriety wasn't up to my self-esteem. My sobriety was strong, but my self-esteem was still really low. You know, because of now there's this trans community that I wasn't a part of, because I'm still the butch woman that was still like, you know, and Becky can also, she knows this. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we're still low butch on the totem pole. But when there's some fucking kind of fiasco, like the AIDS crisis, who do they call? Fucking butch women. Because we don't take no shit. We'll fuck you up. We got you. We'll take the abuse from you. But we love you. Mm-hmm. You know? And it's hard to date when you're a butch woman, too. You know what I mean? So I just said, fuck it. And I really focused on, like, being sober and being of service to people and like taking phone calls. Mm-hmm. And slowly things started lining up for me. Like, I could never have dreamt in my wildest dreams. You know, like, I started working, doing production work in transportation. I really liked it. And my dream was to join Local 399, but I had been a permit for, like, since 2006, and you know, like, to be a gay woman in a man's world, like, especially one that looks like me, I didn't think it was going to happen. You know, but things change over the years, you know, and now I'm in Local 399. I'm a Teamster.
Yeah.
Like, and they like, accept me. Mm-hmm. The president of Local 399 is like, they want diversity now. If you can do the job, you got it. You know, and I'm treated very, very good in the union, which, you know, I don't think in 2006 I would have really appreciated it as much as I do now with all the hard work and everything I've done. I don't ever want to take it for granted. You know, and I think the relationship, and I met a girl. I'm in a relationship with this girl named Lisa. She's like somebody that I never thought in a million years I could date. Mm-hmm. You know, she's like, if I could have written down a perfect woman for myself, it would be her. You know, we get along really good. Gives me my space, I give her her space. And there's no weirdness. And, you know, I don't have to be worried about her. You know, like, and I don't have to be in the chaos of it all. Mm-hmm. I'm learning to not, that's not a good thing. Being like comfortable in chaos is not a good thing. It's horrible, you know? But I didn't know that until I came back to LA from San Francisco and had to go through this whole sober bottom. Like I wanted to drink over this thing. I had a glass of whiskey in my hand and I'm like, fuck it. And then I get a call from my friend Adrian in Echo Park and she said, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm getting ready to drink. She'll, get in your car and come do a fucking couch commitment with me for a week. And I did. And she'll, are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, you're right. I don't want to use. You know, like, I'm too old. It's not cute anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not cute. You know, like, what is cute is keeping the memory of people that have passed and being able to remember them, mm-hmm. and learn from them. That's how you keep their memory alive. You know what I mean? Like, if I use, like, that, because of such sadness that has happened to me, I don't think I would ever be able to come out of it. I would be dead. Mm-hmm. You know? I don't think there'd be a prison or institution for me because I would be dead. You know? But I don't, like, I don't feel that, sober bottom in being sober is such a bad thing if you have the community around you to lift you. Do you know what I mean? I think when you have a sober bottom in sobriety, it, when you can come out of it, you're so grateful for your sobriety. Like, it's like it's kind of this weird evolution that I did. Whereas I'm like a lot more grateful for my sobriety because like I started nitpicking meetings. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, people are just here to network and like the fucking speaker isn't even that good and like I didn't learn shit and you know what I mean? Like, look at her clothes.
Yes.
And, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And I was telling my friend Maria, like, you know, the fucking sober, like the fucking speaker sucked. So, Danielle, you know, I don't want to hear your bitching until you can get up there and do it your fucking self. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you're fucking right. Those are the kind of friends I have. Mm-hmm. Like, they tell me straight up, like, no. You know, they don't care if they have to hurt my feelings. You know, and I think that's how you have to be. You know, like, and it's helped me a great deal. You know, and now I have, like, I have, a, you know, sponsee that I'm there for no matter what. You know, I am that phone call when people want to jump off the fucking Golden Gate Bridge. You know, I will take that phone call at 2:00 in the morning and be like, yo, dude, like, that sucks. I know. Like, that's the kind of person I want to be. Fitting in and feeling less than in my butchness is not how I was raised. I raised myself to be a strong butch woman, and that's how I'm going to stay. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's what I need to learn from all of this. You know, keep sober, be kind, and, you know, try not to trip so hard on the world. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to learn from our mistakes. If we don't learn from our mistakes, we don't grow.
You have been listening to the Transformations Recovery Podcast
with host Roman Cooper. This episode has been brought to you by Transformations Care Residential Detox. Look us up at transformationscare.com or call us at 424-340-9267. Transformations Recovery Podcast was produced and edited by Sammy Town and Annalisa Cheshire. We would like to thank our guests and everyone who has helped us out along the way.
Hey, Annalisa! I love her. She's awesome.
She's so wonderful.